one sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. How's it going out there? You know what? The hearings are on right now. Those live, the third hearings where they're going to show you how Mike Pence just missed being lynched by the skin of his teeth. And then, like, we could debate whether that was good or not so good. I don't know. But it's crazy. I can't believe this fucking planet. How do we get here? Well, one thing I can tell you is thank God for Radio Free Brooklyn, because we're going to make it all better. We are here to make it all better. And all you have to do is donate a little bit of money and everything's going to be fine. I promise you. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. Also, while you're there, you know, you can check us out. We have every kind of talk, music, comedy, sports, politics, you know, really. And we do a lot of community, good stuff for the community. It's really worth donating and getting involved. I also need to tell you about Men's Health Month, which I think Men's Health Month is kind of like an oxymoron, isn't it? Because all we do is complain how men get all the bulk of health care. But nevertheless, men do have health. And there are men that really, you know, not all men can afford good health care. So since it's men's screening, cancer screening for Men's Health Month, so I want you to go to, you can get free cancer screening, okay? So what you do is you contact the CSP Cancer Services Program of Brooklyn at 718-250-8708. That's 718-250-8708 for men in Kings County age 45 and older without insurance. So you should really, especially colorectal cancer, you know, butt cancer. That stuff's nasty. Make sure you don't get it, okay? So just go there, get checked. It's free. It can't be bad. You got to do this. Okay, so guess who's on today? I have a repeat, and I'm going to repeat that, a repeat guest, comedian Jake Flores. I had Jake on like a long, long time ago when I was first starting this podcast. I listened to it, and I have to pop. Jake, what did you walk away from the podcast like the first time thinking, what an asshole?
No, not at all.
I really sounded like I knew what I was talking about. We talked about like your family and your background, and I was like a little heavy on the opinions about like, and you're bipolar.
Yeah.
How's the bipolar going?
I don't know if I think that's the diagnosis anymore.
Really?
To be honest with you, yeah.
What do you think it is now?
Well, I kind of like, I read a lot, and I think that I guess my big brain theory about this is that all diagnoses are just ways of kind of explaining and containing symptoms of just a larger kind of traumatic base problem that like everyone has. I read this book called The Body Keeps the Score recently. It's about PTSD.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, and it kind of poses this theory that like PTSD is this underlying like wound that you have that then, you know, depending on how it expresses itself, you can get it diagnosed as, oh, this, you know, this turned into bipolar or ADD or whatever the, you know, hell. And I got diagnosed with cyclothymia at one point, which mm-hmm. is like a version of bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I don't know, I don't believe it or disbelieve it, but I just kind of rethinking.
So you've changed your opinion. That's so interesting. That makes good sense. And then we were talking about drinking, still drinking.
Yeah,
good.
Pretty,
I
pretty
like
hungover
that.
Today.
Good. I am a little bit too, so we're in the same boat on that.
I have not been observing Men's Health Month.
Oh, really? You could get your ass screened. Well, you're not over 45, so maybe not. You could probably get somebody to do that just for the hell of it, though.
I think I got it screened recently you know, unofficially.
Unofficially. Good, good. As long as somebody's looking out for it. You know, you just need. So here's what I want to tell you guys, you people out there, who's listening. So here's why I like Jake, okay? Jake is really smart and really funny and not full of shit. Like, no, like, gimmicks, just like truth and like not. You know, he's just like he's just authentic or real, and those are the kind of people that I respond to. Is that okay, Jake? And he's also really popular. Your career is really, since you were on last, I think your career sounds like it's going really well. Like, you just came off a tour with a band and shit. Like, tell us about your pod. Brag a little bit about your career. Go on. Come on. I got to convince these people.
Sure.
You tell them. You know better than I do.
I have to do it every time I get on stage.
No, you're great.
I think the last time we talked was a long time ago.
It was a long, long time ago.
I've lived in this area for like 9 years. Mm-hmm. And like, I think when I was first kind of getting my feet on the ground mm-hmm. in New York, mm-hmm. you were somebody who I worked with, came on and did this show, mm-hmm. and since then things have oddly worked out. And authentic is a good word, and I don't even mean that like the, as a compliment really, because like it's a value that I don't think people my age hold as much as I do. It's often considered to be more of a Gen X value, mm-hmm. the idea of personal authenticity. Mm-hmm. Millennials and Zoomers are kind of more into like, that doesn't matter, mm-hmm. politics matters, and like I think the personal is kind of political, so I it's in my nature to kind of try to be the authentic, right?
Yeah.
So for that reason, I didn't think my career would work out, and I never, like, I didn't have big plans for this. I kind of came into this knowing I'm doing something kind of weird. I'm a comic. I don't think like other comics, so you know, I'm gonna do it and see what happens, but it's probably gonna wind down. And I always figured I'd have to get a straight job and go back mm-hmm. to college and all this other stuff.
I was right. This is the point. I was right. I picked a winner. You know who else was on the show around that time? Was Julio Torres.
Oh yeah.
He's like a multimillionaire now.
Yeah, I love that about comedy. Him? Well, I love and hate this about comedy, depending on the person. Uh-huh. But I knew all these people when they were nobody, and then you see, sometimes you see somebody on TV and you're like, oh, good for them. Or you see somebody on TV and you're mm-hmm. like, ah, you know, you shake your fist.
He's got a great fashion sense. I think that Julio, I think that helped him. He's also really, I mean, he's whatever.
He's so funny.
But
yeah. I'm glad he's famous.
I'm glad he's famous. And I really, like, when I saw you, I thought, this guy's going to make it. And I was right. It's because you were on my show. Let's put it that way. Because of all the attention you got being on my radio show, right?
That's probably what happened. Yeah, I think so.
But you just came back from a long tour. And he was saying that are you going to release some of the recordings and stuff like that? Or
yeah, I recorded the set we did in New York City here at Le Poisson Rouge in the Lower East Side.
Yeah.
And I haven't looked at it yet because I don't put out a lot of my own recordings and stuff because I just think comedy is better like live. Mm. And I have the thing where I don't like listening to my own voice and stuff. It makes me kind of cringe. So like, it's going to be a process when I'm sitting down and editing this thing. But yeah, I'm going to put it out in some regard because I have my career has been taking off. And the thing that everyone that I work with complains about is like, oh, you don't have any material online. Like when we promote.
I agree. I look today too.
No, I have nothing. I don't put anything up because I don't like that part of the job. But I'm starting to realize that if you actually have stuff going on, you kind of have to. So
yeah,
I'll probably put some stuff from that set. I think I'll put online.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, look forward to that. You need to do that. Can I say this? It's Dr. Lisa. You need to do that for your career.
Yeah. Well,
and you're working really hard. He does four like podcast episodes a week. This is crazy.
Well, I recorded two albums, you know, and that's how I like to put material out. But they recently were taken down off of Spotify.
Why did you say bad words?
No, you're allowed to say that bad words on Spotify. Right. Well, I said bad words in the sense of the meanings of them were maybe critical of Spotify. That might be what happened. But
did you say shit about Spotify?
Well, during this thing that happened recently where a lot of artists were boycotting and taking their stuff down over in protest over the way that they pay people, which is not well, they mysteriously took down a lot of comedians. And I don't know.
So are other comedians talking about it too?
Yeah, a lot of people, like Kyle Kinane, who's like hella famous,
got that is.
Taken down, and like he's a huge deal. So no one knows exactly. Well, not no one knows. I don't know exactly what happened there because I talked to. I recorded with a record label, and they told me that like I think their stuff got blanket banned.
Oh yeah, so. That could be it. That could be it. You got caught in the. Well, that's terrible. Screw them. Screw. Yeah. I better watch it. I need all the help I can get. I mean, so anyway, so what I want to talk about today is I wanted to hear a little bit about like what you think about the state of comedy because, like I said, you're smart and I've heard a lot of I've heard some grumblings. I heard Marc Maron, for one, saying, you know, that young comedians are whiny about woke culture and all that crap.
I
also want to, I have a love-hate thing with him. I think he's shitty to chicks. I do. He's sure. Shitty. He's a misogynist. But, you know, I kind of like, you know, I don't know. He's good at it. and subtle. He really is good at manipulating women because he's so good with them. But you know, he knows how to talk to them. But the thing is that I also wanted to talk to you about that I just found out that you are non-monogamous. And I want to hear – and you said you would talk about that. So I think we should save the bulk of the time for that. But also, how's your brother? He had he was on the spectrum.
Yeah.
How's he doing? Well, he moved out and then he moved back in. Is he living with your parents still?
He's still on the spectrum. That's how that works, I think. He moved back. Yeah, he lives with my folks still, but he's doing pretty well. I mean, I go down there and I see them, you know, a couple times a year every time I swing through that part
Texas.
Of the country. Yeah.
And he's not unhappy. He's okay.
Yeah, I think he's doing pretty good.
All right, good. Will you say hi for me and then I ask about him?
I will.
Good, good. So what do you think about comedy since like the last century? We talked in 2015, I believe. Maybe it was right when I was starting out, 2015, 16, something like that. So where's comedy now? I thought comedy was doing pretty well in those days. There was a lot of weird, interesting shit. So what about right now?
If you're asking me, my opinion is it's pretty bad.
Like what? And what? Go ahead. Sorry, I interrupt you asking to me. Go ahead.
Oh, it's all quite all right. I mean, honestly, I think the pandemic did a lot to damage it. Like, you know, what the original wave of the pandemic, like 2020, when lockdown was happening, you know, a lot of people I know in comedy who were doing it for authentic reasons of just enjoying it, then had a break from it and decided, because it is kind of bad for you. It's kind of an addiction in a lot of ways, even when it's going well. A lot of people took a step away from it and quit. And people who were able to see that are smart. And so the people who didn't see that are more addictive types. And they kept going. And then
interesting.
A lot of the, you know, the good comedy, in my opinion, happens. I mean, it happens a lot of different places, but like good people perform in alt rooms and people that perform in clubs are often doing so because they're able to rationalize working with extremely right-wing club owners, people that protect sexual assaulters and stuff like that. Everyone I know in this business that gets ahead turns a blind eye constantly, and they all know about all this horrible stuff that happens in the small community of venues that advance your career. But the decision is, well, do you say something and lose your footing, your position, or do you just, you know, go, I all got to get ahead? And that's what happens. So because the material economy of comedy crashed, the only people that were able to continue doing it and continue being in positions of control and power were people who were willing to turn a blind eye to a lot of this bullshit that happens in the industry. So it got worse, and it was already bad, but like it's the only people that hung on to the thing as it shirked everyone were people who will put up with bullshit, you know.
You know, that's so interesting. I think that's what Maren was talking about too, that it's gotten really right wing. And you know, that is why. Okay, I've got a couple of questions, but why do you think doing comedy is an addiction, and like people have their shit together, get it? What can you explain that a little, talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I love doing comedy, but I have no delusions about it being healthy. Like, it has all these occupational hazards that go with it. There are a lot of sober comedians, and it's, you know, for a couple of reasons. One of them is because you get paid in booze, and eventually, if you're doing that, you're not even having fun drinking. So you're drinking in this functional way, and eventually you might that just turn into a problem that is not even fun. So you just to continue doing like a lot of people quit drinking so they can continue doing comedy. I mean, the other thing that happens is there's a lot of people who like do this thing where they replace the addiction with the addiction to comedy. Like, you know how people get addicted to AA?
Oh yeah.
The social aspect of it. I mean, there's people who, you know, the pandemic was good for this because it a lot of people would never have thought about, oh, why do I do this thing constantly every week, even though it doesn't really pay any money, you know? And then a lot of people quit because I think it gave them a moment of clarity when you were forced to stop for a couple months or whatever.
You know, that's, oh, I don't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just, it would just really struck me because during the pandemic, I actually started doing comedy. I've taken a run at it other times, but I was like, so I started doing two open mics a week. And I did it for like almost a year. You know, I wasn't even trying to get book shows. I was just trying to really write. You know, writing's part of like all the crap, part of whatever it is that I make or do anyway. And so I just wanted to write and, you know, have the experience. I like, you know, I expand my, you know, get to, I think it's great to, a great way to become better at performing in general. It's a great discipline. It's a huge discipline. It's a hard, very, very hard, and it's a huge discipline. But I did get a bit disillusioned about what it would take to actually do like what you're doing now. And I think you're much more natural at it, like way more natural at it. But the idea of going out every night to bars and staying out late, and I don't like doing that. And you get 5 minutes, and like even the open mics, which I actually thought were kind of fun, it's an hour and a half and you get 5 minutes on stage. Right? Is that, and so it's just this huge amount of time that you're out doing the comedy thing.
Yeah, I mean, if you say I'm natural on stage, I'm natural now. I've been doing comedy for 15 years or something like that, right?
Yeah, you started when you were 19.
I was not good when I was young, and it's a skill that I built. But like, the thing is, it is fun. Open mics are fun, especially when you first started doing them. But I always think back, and I remember like when I first started, you know, how the thought changed from, oh, maybe I'll do this, to doing it, getting the thrill and the rush of it, continuing to do it, going every week, not being good at it, but thinking you killed fun. And stuff.
Or just the experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it starts off and it's like karaoke. It's just a goof, you know? And then what the problem is, it's because it is related intrinsically to a career path that is material in a lot of ways. Like, what happens is, you know, you quickly, and I think about this a lot because I used to tend bar at a place that did an open mic, and I would see new people and I would go, oh, you're doing all the thoughts that I had when I was younger. And I would see like, you know, you see it and you're kind of embarrassed for them because you're like, you're making all these mistakes that I made. But like, you immediately go from just doing this thing for fun to getting booked on shows, getting spots.
Well, you did,
and then there's this hierarchical nature to it where like comedy clubs have like guest spots, hosts, features, headliners. So you start thinking of yourself as, oh, I'm at guest spot level or I'm at host level, and that other person's at feature level and stuff like that. And all this stuff, this is a cult. Like, this is cult thinking. This is how, like, Scientology works, where you're like, oh, that person has 100 thetans and I have 50 or whatever. And that's because you're getting, like, you're kind of love bombing yourself in a weird way, where you're, like, manipulating your own emotions through the thing. Like, it organically forms into this thing that has a lot of really bad outcomes. And what's crazy about it is that, like, there isn't that much money in comedy.
No, there's no money in it. So, like, no, not to get to, like, a certain level. I mean, I know you're making a living, which is amazing for anybody, but, like, that's, even to get to that level, I know that you were, you know, you were not, you were working in a restaurant when I, like, a long time ago. But I was going to say, the thing about it that really makes me insane is I realize that in order to get to, like, anywhere, you have to tolerate a whole bunch of nights where you're going to be spending your whole night doing comedy for, like, five people. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, basically, you do – it's like comedy is very, like – I don't know what's the word. It's like stratified in how good it is or whatever. That's not the word. It's a lot of miserable experiences like that, but you do them because if you keep doing it and you keep working at it, even just as a statistical random thing, eventually you're going to have a show that is so good that it makes up for everything. And everyone's chasing that dragon, you know?
Right. But what it does actually is it makes me have huge respect for people that do it, because the discipline drive, I mean, it's an incredible discipline. It's much more of a discipline, say, than, like, a lot of other creative ventures. And so I have a lot of respect, but I also feel like the desire to do it has to be, like, so primary.
Yeah.
You know. So that's interesting. Are there any rooms that you can recommend right now that are good? I mean, I always love Cobra Club on Friday nights.
Oh, Cobra Club on Friday nights is my favorite show in the world.
Yeah. Eric Bergstrom, love him, and John F. O'Donnell, and then Mika Fox. They're all like that. Those guys are consistently great. But besides that, is there anything else? What am I missing? Where should I go?
I'm not really sure, because everything changed so much. And the thing is, I don't have a home club because I do DIY. Like, I just book everything kind of randomly.
Tiny Cupboard.
Yeah, I mean, Tiny Cupboard is, like, you can see some good shows there, but, like, I won't vouch for a venue like that, because they were doing things like during the pandemic, someone was booking shows there, not even living in New York, charging money and then not paying the comics. So
really, you know, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, the owners are great. The owners are great, but
I don't know them. I just know stuff like that. And I mean,
Matt,
like,
and Amy,
in nature, comedy clubs are just exploitive like that. So I can't recommend any of them.
Pine Box has been doing a lot of comedy.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, alt comedy that happens in, like, bars and stuff like that, it doesn't have that exploitive nature to it. It's just a symbiotic thing where you just get to do this thing in the back of the bar. So, like, Pine Box is cool. There's a lot of good shows there.
Yeah, very cool.
But I haven't. I've been running a show at the Gutter, which has been, you know, they've been pretty good to us. I know they have another really popular show there called Comics You Should Know, which is, like, one of the best shows in the city. So if you want to see stand-up.
Okay, that's a good one.
Definitely check that out.
And Shaq Stanley has Lover on Friday, on Sunday nights. Do you know him?
Sure. Yeah, he's cool.
He's a good guy.
Is it Easy Lover?
Easy Lover, you're right. Easy Lover.
Used to be a Legion, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. There we go. Some tips for you guys. If you haven't, like, gone out and seen comedy and you want to see something good that you're not going to see advertised, right, you know, like, in, club comedy, whatever. There's definitely, like, a really big distinction right now between club comedy and alt comedy, right?
Yeah. I mean, alt comedy, I think, is just better, because it just, what happened with clubs recently is that as the economy tightened and, like, as this sort of culture war waged, they became, I mean, you can see a lot of great comics if you just go to something like the Cellar, but, like, what sells real hard there is this stupid anti-woke stuff that Marin was talking about.
Yeah.
And, like, I did the Comedy Cellar's radio show at one point, or their podcast. It was after I got raided by Homeland Security, and mm-hmm. they reached out to me. Mm-hmm. They found me and they were like, mm-hmm. hey, come on this show. Mm-hmm. And I naively thought, oh, a comedy club wants to hear the story that I'm talking about.
Right.
About the, where I'm critical of ICE and Homeland Security. And I showed up and it was just three Republicans screaming at me about how, you know, what are we going to let everyone in the country or whatever? And
Oh my God.
It was an illuminating experience because I realized, oh, wow. Of course, the people that own these small businesses are, of course, they're right wing psychopaths. Wow. You have to be to kind of like own a small business like this in this country.
Post
right?
that when I post this show.
And those things, you know, that those like material, like ideologies that, you know, that are in the minds of the owners of these places are reflected in kind of what's happening in the business in a lot of ways, you know, even though, like, I mean, Lorne Michaels is a freaking, you know, conservative and he runs SNL and they do liberal comedy, but it's still at the end of the day, there's things that show can and can't do. Mm-hmm. And this is, I don't know. It's to me, it's bad. I mean, to me, this is the stuff that gets me so worked up that I'm like, well, I want to talk about this, you know?
You mean, which stuff is it? What about Saturday Night Live? Is that like, what's your thoughts on that?
I think it sucks. I think it's lame. Okay. If you're a comedian and you want to like work on Saturday Night Live, to me, that's just like, if you were a musician and you wanted to, you know, go on like American Idol or something, like that's for dorks, you know, but it's weird because in comedy, you don't really have that way of thinking. Like everyone is like, no, that's the goal. That's the that's the high paying thing that I'm here to do. And comedy as a like art form claims that everyone worships George Carlin and Lenny Bruce. And they claim to be these subversive free thinkers.
Right.
But I think that stuff kind of died away.
Because of the we could go on about this, the George Carlin special. And I know like it probably really resonated. Like it probably just really got you in the gut. Right.
Yeah. I watched it the other night. It was great.
So good.
I mean, God, he was the best. But
remind me.
It was so kind of frustrating, though, because when you do a documentary like that, you know, you show the person and then you have all these talking heads. You pick like the best of the best comedians to try to explain him. And the things that these people, the titans of comedy, you know, you got Stephen Colbert and Chris Rock and all these people trying to explain Carlin, and they are fundamentally unable to. Like they sounded so stupid trying to explain what was happening because literally nobody took that ball and ran with it.
No one.
Carlin, he was the only comic to subvert comedy.
Mm-hmm.
He was a counterculture guy.
So good. I saw him when I was in high school.
Really?
Yeah,
cool.
Really old. It was great. Yeah, my boyfriend in high school, his father, his divorced father, took his girlfriend and it was a double date, me and my boyfriend, her. Anyway, so let's talk about the girls. Girls, are you hetero? are you firmly hetero?
Yeah, I'm hetero.
Okay, you're hetero. So you're non-monogamous. So tell us about that. Like what? Tell me about that. Like what's the story? That sounds like so much fun.
No, it's not. It's not fun. Of course,
well,
it's fun.
Can you define what that means to you?
Yeah.
Being non-monogamous and how you present yourself when you're meeting women. Like, what's that like?
Well, okay. So, I mean, I came to New York, right? Because I'm a weirdo from Texas. And
sure.
When you're a weirdo and you're in a big conservative place and you don't fit with it, you either frustratingly, you know, deal with it or you go somewhere and you sort of, you know, try to find a life that fits you better, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, I mean, if you go to an open mic right now, you'll hear three or four jokes about the people in Brooklyn being polyamorous or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, everyone's annoyed with it. And it's like, well, it's because those people came from other places to be here. So like, it's something that I figured out after, you know, doing the serial monogamous thing and continuing to get into relationships and then having them continually fail or not fail, but like not, you know, not continue. Basically, I don't consider a relationship that doesn't continue to be a failure. It's just but I would start to see the same problems arising. And, you know, at the same time, I was reading a lot of like theory, you know, a lot of like political economy and socialist theory and stuff like that, and started like realizing the history of how the thing that we're all sort of engaged in, referred to as monogamy, even came about and why it exists. And it's weird that it has this hegemonic, like, you know, place in society. So, like, when I started to really think about how it's kind of referred to in this line of thinking as like the escalator. Like, you have these assumptions when you meet somebody, both of you defer to this escalator style of thinking of like, okay, well, we did this and now it goes next to this next level.
It's three dates, we have sex, then like 3 years we get married.
Yeah. And
6 years we have kids, something like that, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And when I was a younger dude, you know, you could just avoid that stuff. You could hook up with somebody and then they start thinking escalator thoughts and then you go, oh, I'm a dirtbag, I whoops, and you break up or whatever.
Yeah.
But that started to seem unethical. And especially as I got older and people started to really get closer to like, no, yeah, this is, yeah, you know,
I respect you saying that. I think a lot of girls don't like to admit that either, that like they're bummed. It's just,
well, everyone gets bummed out the closer you get to having to make this decision that is the default decision that society kind of puts on you.
Right.
Some people are doing it even though they don't want to. It's just like what is done, right?
Yeah.
And so I became very into like talking about that and, you know, kind of actually asking the question, like, what do you actually want to do if you weren't just doing what society, you know, said?
Right.
And I, you know, I started to realize that, like, I don't really think I want to get married or have kids. I could maybe see marriage in some way, but definitely I don't think I want to have kids. Like, I can tell. Mm-hmm. I don't think everyone is supposed to have kids. I think some people, you know, I know who have children and love them. Like, that's, I'm really happy
for
them.
No, but not everybody should. No, not, I'm big on that. Big. There's a lot. I also, like, don't get me started, because the real problem to me is that mothers that regret having children do not voice that enough. And we got to get, there's a lot of, or it's not black and white, but mothers need to talk about how being a mother sucks when they feel like it. And,
yeah,
and there's not enough of that. So, so you thought it through and, so you thought it through and you started to realize that, I'm trying to speed, I want to get to the good part.
Sure.
So I want to get to the good part where the girls, like, you know, yell at you or something, or that you're having an orgy. I don't know what it is. One or the other. So, so you have decided for yourself, like you thought it through yourself, which I respect. You read a lot of stuff and you decided like monogamous relationships were not for you.
Yeah.
And so how did you move forward from that?
Well, I mean, you know, and I also just want to reiterate something I'm talking about. The personal is political for me. So like, I also kind of came to the realization that monogamy is a patriarchal practice.
Oh, well, yeah, because, yeah, well, that's true. And we used to need men to defend us against, you know, other warring tribes and wild animals and build things. And they were a lot more, we needed to, like, and I actually like that idea, because then you get to hang out with a whole group of chicks and you only have one guy. You don't have to like fuck him every single time he wants to.
Not to get too deep into the evolutionary stuff and the primitive communism and stuff like that, but like a lot of people would argue that actually, when you were just defending your tribe from animals and stuff like that, monogamy was not like a practice.
It wasn't.
Right. And so
it's not a natural practice.
It came from property, the advent of agriculture and property. And then, you know, you literally, like, at a wedding, the father gives away the daughter. Yeah. Like, it's the woman is property. That's where it
totally
came from, right?
Totally.
It's stupid.
Totally. Like children, you know, they help on the farm and shit like that. I get that. So what happens now? Like, when, do you call it dating, or like, what, so what's, what do you do now? Like, how do you get the chicks? How do you deal with chicks?
Well, I mean, ethically is the word. Like, I try to, you know, to communicate. And the thing is, what's funny is that people that practice, you know, regular old monogamy, like 99.9% of people on earth, don't communicate things, because everything's implied. And then you get into these huge arguments because you were thinking a thing that was implied and you didn't talk about it and the other person didn't. So, like, honestly, it's very dorky. Like, it's very, there's a lot of nerds that are into this type of thing. And it's, It's, you know, it's like it kind of sucks because in a lot of ways it takes the romance out of things, because instead of meeting someone like kismet style at a bar or something like that, or at a bar, I guess that's not that romantic.
Well, but, no, it is. It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. I believe that.
You know, it's more like you use a dating app and you, that way the person sees you and you go, hey, this is what I'm doing. Like, this is who I am. This is how I'm oriented or whatever. And then if you want to talk from there, but I mean, like, honestly, the realm of monogamy is it's hetero, it's straight people's bullshit. It's straight white, you know, all the hegemonic categories bullshit. And if it feels weird to go, oh, you know, I'm going to go tell people this is what I am doing before you, you know, talk to them, date them. Like, I think that people need to think about queer people more, because it's like, that's how queer people have always had to operate, because there's, you know, there's a lot of different stuff going on there, and you can't be trans or, you know, gay or whatever and then just go to a bar and hope to meet somebody. You kind of have to think about stuff actively rather than passively. And you know, and that's kind of that's what, like, thinking about it that way is what kind of helped me get from thinking about this in theory to, like, actually taking the plunge and practicing it.
So do you I mean, so I'm hearing that it sounds like you mostly meet women online. Like, what happens if you meet a woman out in the world? Has that happened? Must have happened. What do you do then?
Of course. Yeah.
A woman that you want to, like, you know.
I try to be upfront, you know, but the thing is, like, you know, nobody's perfect, right? And, like, this is, dating is always just kind of a mess, you know? And, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm still, like, I'm not like a robot about this. Like,
I'm not implying.
You know, and I am, like, an artist, and in you know, I work in bars and stuff like that, so, like, the people hook up, you know, it just happens or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
But I try to, you know, have the conversation about who I am and what I want around the same time, you know, anyone else kind of would or could, you know, after, you know, a few interactions or whatever. Before things get serious, I have to stop and go, so, you know, this is kind of where I'm at. And sometimes, you know, it's fine and sometimes it isn't. But I usually find that unless you stop things there, you run the risk of someone even going, you know, because they're already, like, attached, going, oh, that is fine, but they're lying, you know.
I agree. Women need to, I think that happens a lot to girls. I'm vulnerable to that. I mean, not well, married now, but I mean, like, when I was your age, no, I mean, I would be like, I'm just gonna fuck this guy for the hell of it. And then I think women biologically, like, you know, are set up to get attached. And I'm like, I'm not even gonna give him my phone number. And then, like, the next day I'd be like, why didn't I give him my phone number? That guy was so great. You know, and I didn't even know his name.
Yeah.
So I think women are more vulnerable to that, and they should admit it. But so do you have multiple dating, like, do you see multiple women? Does any of this progress into where you're hanging out with them regularly?
Yeah, I mean, I have, like, a couple of what you'd call relationships going, but, like, I don't know. I talked to a friend of mine about this recently, and she was shocked. She said, oh my God, you have, like, two girlfriends or whatever. And I was like, well, I mean, that sounds shocking if you're thinking, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, like, the you know, the amount of time that it takes to, like, be in a full-on thing with somebody. But, like, I'm really kind of more into, like, what's referred to as solo poly, which is where you are your own main thing. And, like, I have you know, because I don't work a 9-to-5. Like, the things that work and fit in regular old patriarchal monogamous relationships are 9-to-5 jobs and stuff like that. But I am serious about continuing to do stand up and continuing to establish my own way of living and stuff like that. And so, you know, I have a partner I don't see for a month sometimes, and it is totally fine. Like, we're, you know, we specifically like to hang out and get certain things out of each other. And then I, you know, neither of us is kind of, you know, feeling like, oh no, you know, this is you know, this is a problem.
It's good. It works for everybody.
I'm living the way that a lot of single guys already live, except without the lying, is what I'm trying to do. You know what I mean?
I actually do know what you mean. I do exactly know what you mean because I remember when I was your age. No, there would be times where, you know, I would have to really twist and do the whole pretzel thing to, like, be honest and fair and all that because you're sort of, like, in a phase where your life, you're just, you know, it's hard to get everything you need from one person.
Yeah, well, and what's frustrating is that the world is set up, I mean, the world plays out in a certain way where some people can get most of what they need out of another person, and that's, like, enough to go, all right, this works. And it sounds like it does work, but I started to figure out at one point that I can't, and that's not really fair to people who can't, that everyone is trying to sort of, like, force upon you the system mm-hmm. of which you know, you can, like...
And okay. Okay, so how about this? A lot of guys are possessive. And jealousy should be, I guess everyone is jealous. Everyone gets possessive. Does that factor in, or you don't have any of that, or?
No, I remember feeling that way when I was younger a lot. And I remember mm-hmm. kind of feeling like eventually, honestly, through like learning a lot of the theory stuff I was talking about, realizing, wait, that's actually like stupid. Like it's politically wrong. It's like offensive to kind of think of women as property and like that. And I mean, your emotions still exist. Like, I mean, every once in a while you still feel something like that. But like in non-monogamy, there's a lot of like arguing with the cop in your head and like trying to deprogram it and go, no, don't think that way because that isn't actually rational. And it is kind of, you know, weird and possessive. But I mean, also like the thing about me is that that's the type of guy that sucks, and I'm the other type of guy that sucks, which is the guy that is so avoidant, just wants to go play video games, and then the partner is like, why don't you hang out with me, you know?
So it's really like you really like to have your time. Is that what it is, really, more than anything? Probably, like, in a certain way, you like to have having a partner is a lot of responsibility.
Well, I mean, part of this also is like I started to realize something about myself, which is that when you get into a like full on monogamous situation and you like live with someone, that works for a lot of people, and it really stressed me out. Like some people refer to this as introversion. I kind of think because we talked, you know, last time about like my brother, and I think my dad might be on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. From what I've read about autism, it kind of sounds like it's a genetic thing. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was like a drop of this in here. Mm-hmm. I have to be alone. Like I need to be alone from time to time to recharge, collect my thoughts, mm-hmm. because it is so overwhelming to be around people all the time,
right.
Especially someone that is like really, you know, in your space and in your face and needing stuff from you.
Yeah.
That like I go to therapy. I think it's psychological terms. This is a need. You know what I mean? Like I need me time frequently.
Yeah.
And so I started to figure out like, oh, I don't think I want to live with anyone because like just because there's this social pressure to do so and it's at the end of the escalator, I need to address the fact that my needs are in conflict with the end of the escalator. And so I started to figure out, yeah, there's a way I function and it isn't that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And also just materially, like the career I've built, like I have to be alone a lot of the time. I have to travel alone to go to a place. I have to come home and go through a box of t-shirts and ship them out and stuff. I spend all day, you know, just doing this thing or whatever.
Four podcast sessions for and the therapist every week. That's a lot.
Right. That's the fifth podcast I do every week. Talk to my therapist on Zoom.
No, that's a lot. That's but what about, you know, I'm not going to say like loneliness, because I don't get the feeling you're out, you're around people a lot. I don't know if loneliness, but I think there is a need that is human to have like a connection with like somebody who's really going to be there for you.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, I've been in love, you know, and I know what it feels like, and I definitely like want that again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the problem is not everyone who is together is in love, Like, sometimes you're just with someone and you're pretending like that's what's happening, but it's not. And I cannot stomach something like that. I'm only going to do it if it's really authentically happening. Mm. And, like, and it you know, it sucks because, like, there's definitely a fair critique of what I'm talking about. But I guess my answer is just, though, it wouldn't be happening if I was just going through the motions of, like, being with somebody.
Right, right. So, but it doesn't sound like you've ruled it out completely either.
Ruled out what?
Like being in a relationship.
Yeah, I mean, in relationships, but like a monogamous
so
one.
So do all the, so like, let's say you have two or three chicks, do they all know about each other, or?
Yeah, no, totally.
Do they literally know each other?
Some of them. I mean, it depends. Anything can, if you're asking me personally about my life, the answer is yes and yes, I think. But, like, you know, this is, you make your own rules when you do something like this, mm-hmm. instead of deferring to rules. So a person could be like, I don't want anyone I'm dating to fucking ask about anybody else or whatever.
But right. But for you, you're like, you're not.
More often than not, people that do this sort of thing are very, like, it's all very positive and enthusiastic. And, like, you literally might be talking to somebody and they'll go, you know, how was your date with the other so-and-so or whatever? And then you tell them and they're like, that's great. I'm so happy for you. Like, people use this term, I love that for you, a lot in, like, queer spaces,
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a TV show. Isn't that, what's her name has a, isn't that, I love that on you, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know, some cheesy. I don't mean to get into cheesiness. So, so that sounds great. So, like, if I was in a situation like that and I was dating somebody, then I could hang out with the other chick and we could talk about, like, the guy that we were dating.
Yeah, I mean, you could do whatever you want. That's
that would
the
be
point.
So fun. So the yeah. chick's dating you. Do you think they ever talk about what it's like? Do you ever think about that?
I don't actually know that anyone I'm seeing right now actually, like, is on that level of, they're just aware of other mm-hmm. the other person.
So have you known any of these women a long time, like more than a year?
Let's see. Well, I mean,
have you been involved in this sort of thing with them more than a year?
No.
So they're all pretty short term.
Well, yeah, but I was in a monogamous relationship through 2020, and then last year was 2021, and I got back into living actively the way I need to live to be happy and make other people happy.
So maybe you have some feelings about the monogamous. So you had a monogamous relationship during the pandemic, it accidentally happened.
It just happened.
And then you... kind of like, this shouldn't have happened, or
it happened kind of because of the pandemic.
Yes, of course.
Like, we were just seeing each other and then the pandemic happened and it was like, oh shit, we move it. Like, everything escalated really quickly.
Did you move in together?
Basically, I still had my apartment, but she asked me to come over and then it was like lockdown, you know, so it was like, well, you can't go home, and it started to escalate really hard. And then it turns out we didn't really match very well, and that experience really, like, It made me realize, like, I need to not do this because this was bad for me and the other person, and it hurt feelings, you know? And so that's why in 2021, like, you know, we all have kind of a weird amnesia about everything because of the pandemic.
Oh, my God. Like, oh, my God. No, and everyone's affected, and every single person, for better or for worse, their relationship was majorly if they were in a, or being single, people were single and now they're not because of the pandemic. They didn't want to be single anymore. I mean, it affected everybody that way in a major, major.
It heightened everything.
Heightened everything.
You know,
exactly.
And it made you make decisions. But, like, so for what I was saying though is that what 2020, like a year ago is when, like, if you know, you can remember, because time is so weird right now, that's when, like, the vaccines came out and stuff, and like, you were kind of able to, like, start over going outside and stuff. And so that's when I came, you know, I really, like, thought about my life and was like, I need to live in a way that does not hurt me or other people because of, you know, this thing that had happened before. That, you know, it's just bad. And I just, I don't want to do that again, you know?
Was that person in New York?
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you wound up like going to stay at their place and it was like you know a plane ride away or something.
No, yeah, but the pandemic was crazy. Like, people were talking about moving out of New York and stuff like that. And that was another thing where I was like, I don't think I want to do this, you know? I love New York, you know? I love this neighborhood.
Sure, sure. So you wound up sort of just by default winding, was it default sort of? Also circumstances were crazy. So you wound up with in a relationship that you hadn't, like, intentionally gotten into. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think I had kind of a relationship before that that was very like open and non-monogamous and stuff. And after that ended, I think, you know, I kind of let myself revert back to like, oh, I'll just try it again. Just do the kismet thing, meet someone and then get on the escalator and see what happens. And when it happened, it didn't work out again. And I remembered, oh, right, this is why I stopped doing this to begin with. And, so this is like, it's weird because you get like, especially if you're a guy, everyone, when you tell them that you live like this, people think, oh, you're just trying to have a lot of sex. Like, you're just like a horn dog or whatever. And I'm like, I'm doing this because I'm trying to stop pain, you know?
No, I don't, because I think like you can have, like you said, you know, you work in a bar, you can, having sex and having a, like, sex is pretty available.
Right? Yeah.
Right? Totally. I think so.
Yeah, I'm a comedian. I perform in bars all the time.
Yeah, I think sex is pretty available. That's not, and then you can have, like, you can have a hookup probably, and then that's no big deal, right?
Yeah.
So this is also a way for you to be able to have that.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess as I'm getting older, like, that's always fun, but like, I just actively think about all this stuff so much, so I still kind of am like,
still head trip.
Do you, like, I need the person to be like, this is a hookup or whatever, and I'll just worry too much, like, oh, is this going to turn into a thing or whatever?
Yeah, it's still a head trip. So, did like the last relationship that ended, was that very mutual or was it one-sided?
That's an interesting question. I mean, it was, she broke up with me, but she broke up with me because she could tell that I was not happy. So I guess that's kind of mutual.
You kind of like brought on the breakup, but it was her who actually did it.
Yeah, I mean,
were you surprised by it?
No, because we'd been arguing and fighting for so long.
Were you unhappy about it? I mean, there is a certain thing of like just having somebody break up with you, even if it's what you wanted.
Yeah, no, it sucks.
Was it upsetting?
Even if it needs to happen, it's still like your heart still gets broken. It still sucks, you know?
Yes, yes. I've been there a lot.
Strange feeling to have because you're like, your body is kind of telling you don't do this and your brain is like, no, you have to.
It is a mind fuck. It is a mind fuck. One of the things about being married in a long-term relationship is that I appreciate that I don't have that head trip anymore. Just the whole general, is he going to call me? Am I going to see him? You know, like none of that. None of that is in my life, which is,
yeah, it sounds, I mean, that's
huge relief.
That's the part of that that sounds really nice.
Unburdening,
you know?
Unburdening. But relationships are really, really hard. And I totally get what you're saying.
Well, I'm also not being dogmatic about this. This is another misconception that people have about this sort of thing, is that you're like, I'm here telling you should live like this. Like,
no,
oh,
I
you should
that.
Live the way you need to live, and I should live the way I need to live, and we should all respect that about each other, you know.
So what about that person that you had, that like I was starting to ask you about, like having somebody in your life that you count on, like you, when we have like with that one person that we all count on, and you know that's usually in an intimate relationship. So how do you feel about that? Do you have that? Do you miss that? Do you want that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, when I was in like, I've been in a relationship before that was like, we were open, but it was, we were like what's referred to as your primary partner. So like we were like, you know, living together and stuff like that. And like, that is a thing about that, that I miss, because like you, it's just nice to have someone to bounce your thoughts off of all day, as opposed to like, You know, because I'm a creative type and I make stuff, I mean, I'm constantly talking to myself and then talking to the internet and then talking to podcasts and stuff like that, but it doesn't, it's a methadone. It doesn't quite fill that need. And like, you know, I miss that, but the problem is like just getting that, just pursuing someone to get that, but then inviting all these other conflicts would be a huge problem that would outweigh getting that on some level. So like,
Yeah. I think also I wonder if some of this is, I mean, everything you're saying to me makes perfect sense and is also very ethical and well thought out. I mean, I respect everything. I think he's a good example of a dude, ladies. Good example. Takes responsibility. But the thing is that I wonder also if some of this is a life stage in that, like, the way your life seems right now, I mean, it just seems like you're incredibly busy. Things are going really well. And, you know, you should be making your career your priority because it's going well and now's the time and you're getting a lot out of it and putting a lot into it. So I just don't see how you could have, I mean, you could have a, you could have somebody who was going to, like, send out the T-shirts for you. A chick that would be into doing that, but you don't want that.
Well, that's, yeah, I mean, that's that'd, I don't want to exploit someone for labor. You know what I mean? Like, I would pay someone to do that if I was making enough money to, like, pay someone to do that. But I'm not just going to, like, ask my girlfriend to, like, send out
no me. But I mean, I'm just joking really, but I'm saying, like, some, there are women who would be like, I have, my boyfriend's a comedian, I help him, I send out his shirts, I go and make sure he has, like, his drink before the show, he's so cool. there are chicks like that, you know that, right? Am I right about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's like, yeah, the photographer girlfriend is a thing, like, it's all, it's all fine. I don't know if
you don't want that or you're not gonna have that.
I don't know if that's in the cards for me. It might be. I mean, it's kind of cool. I have some friends who are, you know, that's kind of a duo and stuff like that, and I think it's cool, but it's, you know, it's whatever works for you, and I don't know if that works for me.
Yeah, or that hasn't come across your plate. Let's put it that way.
I'm a big control freak when it comes to, like, my business and my art and stuff like that, so, like, I think I kind of need someone who actually just respects that I, like, go do the thing by myself. And then,
right. Have you dated other comedians?
Yeah. And it's just like, it's bad. It's like the blind leading the blind, or that's not the term, but it's like inmates running the asylum. We're all crazy. I don't know what the metaphor I'm going for here is, but it sucks because it's a conundrum. Everyone in comedy, because it's such a micro community and, like, everyone knows each other, you know, a lot of people date each other.
Sure.
But the thing that you get out of that is that, you know, finally someone understands what you're talking about all the time. Whereas if you were dating somebody that isn't involved, they're like, what's a guest spot? What's a trip ticket?
Oh, yeah. You know, or even just the lifestyle.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's a really fucked up lifestyle to have a difficult, challenging one. And I think when you get, the TV show or something else where you have a more, like, you know, you might have part of what you're saying makes so much sense, and part of that is your lifestyle. Is your lifestyle as you get older going to become more? I mean, I'm sure it will be in comedy, but will a comedy career be more predictable or more? You know, or will other people be organizing it for you? Who knows? But you know what I'm saying. Like, right now, what you're saying makes perfect sense.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing about dating comedians is this huge conflict of interest. Like, you're both in the same social scene, so everyone knows your business. People write fucking material about their partners. It's really, I find that really rude and invasive and insensitive, you know? Happens all the time. It's happening to me right now. My ex is going talking about
that's
me.
That's hilarious.
It's really annoying.
And then when things, we're going to have to stop because we have 30 seconds. But anyway, thanks to everybody for listening. Go to radiofreebrooklyn.org. Jake, say your promo stuff, right?
Yeah, now. So I have two podcasts. They're called Pod Damn America and Why You Mad. They're both similar. My handle on everything is @feraljokes, @feraljokes. feral like an animal, jokes like jokes. I'm performing tomorrow night at Secret Loft in Manhattan as part of paid protests. It's a DSA fundraiser that me and my podcast buddies put on.